Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. This is Chris Solomon speaking. It is 11:36 p.m. here in Chaska, Minnesota. My brain's pretty much mush at this point, but we're doing an emergency podcast. Grabbed a couple beers from the bar downstairs, four people in person, Kyle Porter's hotel room, Kyle Porter from CBS, Brendan Porter from SB Nation, and
Brendan Porter, my brother.
I told you my brain is mush. Brendan Porath from SB Nation and Kevin Van Valkenburg from ESPN the Magazine. Kevin, let's start with you. What is your most memorable moment or your biggest memory from the 2016 Ryder Cup?
It's going to have to be Patrick Reed. Everything that we have joked about for the last year about Patrick Reed, turning him into a caricature, making him basically like bigger than life figure, it all came true. The most ridiculous Patrick Reed fantasy that you could write for the Ryder Cup freaking came true this week. How surreal is that?
That didn't involve a bald eagle.
Exactly. Like if a picture came out tonight of Patrick Reed just sitting and having like a Diet Coke with a bald eagle sitting on his shoulder, would that at all surprise you?
That'd be like the sixth least surprising thing we saw for the whole week.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who watched Rory scream in his face after Rory had just made his third straight birdie. And then rolled in one on top of him and just stared down Rory, did the Dikembe, and then fist bumped him as they walked through the tunnel to the next hole.
We could do a whole podcast of just our favorite, like our top 10 Patrick Reed moments for the week.
From the eighth hole.
I mean, everything about Patrick was amazing this week. He's made for this event. It makes you, like, you know, I don't think Patrick Reed and I would agree on anything, like, politically. I don't think Patrick Reed would ever, like, have read a book that I would have also have read. We would probably not have a lot in common to talk about if we took a drive somewhere or if we accidentally sat next to each other on an airplane. But I love watching that dude play golf. He makes me feel alive. And in addition to that eighth hole, I'll always remember him going for the green and two on Saturday. And Jordan screaming, "Come on, Patrick!" as the ball was in the air. Like, not even waiting until it had basically reached its apex, as they both said. Just a surreal moment, just such a fun event. It lived up to every one of my hopes and expectations.
Porath, your first one inside the ropes, what sticks out the most for you?
I think it has to be just Rory, the opposite of Reed. I know he didn't win today, but... I'm a bit of a Rory homer, kind of always have been.
You're a good company right here. As a huge smile comes over Porter's face.
Take it easy, I'm the Rory corner here.
I kind of loved him, you know, around 2013 and 2014, just took it to a whole new level, and we've never kind of come back from that. I think just seeing him up close and personal in this environment where it's so adversarial and he was the away team, and the way he embraced being a villain, and at every turn, every putt, like no moment, he would not take, you know, he would not miss the opportunity to kind of give it back to the crowd, give it to his opponent. I think, you know, just starting from that bow on the afternoon session on Friday, the double bow and the scream, "Fucking come on!" You know, like, that just sent it to the stratosphere for the whole weekend, right?
I still don't think he's the villain. Like, it's not like an NFL game where, you know, you're playing your rival and their best player, you like, sports hate that player. I don't feel like the American crowd hated Rory at all. I really don't. I feel like they were egging him on, but I went out in the practice round. The only thing noteworthy I saw at all in the practice rounds was just how many American fans were yelling for Rory in a supportive way, getting his attention, "Rory, Rory," just like cheers for Rory the whole time. And it was American fans that were doing that. And even when they're egging him on with the quote unquote abuse, I felt like it was in like a I don't know how to describe it, like a Reggie Miller almost kind of way, and that's what made it so entertaining to me, was that I don't think anyone's, like, American fans are walking away from this like, I dislike Rory McIlroy.
Now. Totally. I think there are.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's funny, like, you know, it's a weird window though, because we see some of it on Twitter where it's like that stands out to us, like the assholes who are like, you know, he's a dick, whatever, screw Rory, blah, blah, blah. And, like, there's so many people who, like, think it's amazing. Like, that feel like us, like, this is just the best sports it gets. Like, exactly. Yeah. Like Reggie Miller giving the choke sign. Like, Knick fans would, like, tell you Reggie Miller was the most fun opponent we ever played against. Like, yeah, he's stuck a dagger in our heart. I think most American fans are probably that way.
But. Yeah, most, but I think it sort of highlights maybe part of the reason that people don't like Rory, just simply because he's not American. Like,
sure.
Like why Americans don't like him. And I feel like if you didn't like him because he's not American, this week made you hate him.
Yeah.
And if you didn't care, and if you already liked him, this week made you love him. So I feel like it sent people, and I agree, I think it's a minority, but I think it sent people in different directions.
I want to know, where did this come from? Like, this, we've never seen this from him.
Did you see what he said about the Poulter thing?
No.
He said afterwards, he said, I knew we didn't have Poulter this week, and I was trying to be Ian Poulter.
Wow.
I was trying to...
You never go full Poulter. Never.
He said, and then he said, hopefully Poulter will be back in Paris in 2018.
I mean, I think he was super self-aware about the whole thing the whole time. Like, I think he knew he was kind of playing a role as a... I don't know... not to say he wasn't being genuine, but I think he kind of was self-aware that he was going over the top, and it was very purposeful, whereas Patrick Reed kind of may not have that self-awareness, and that's just who he is. And... maybe, you know, he hasn't won four majors or been number one in the world like Rory, and, you know, probably thinks he has.
Yeah. There's just so few weeks out of the year that really make Rory tick or really make Rory move. And even the majors don't seem to... I mean, I know the Ryder Cup is a completely different event from an emotional perspective, but the majors don't seem to pique his interest as much as this week did. I mean, it looked like he just cared at a level I've never seen him care at. I mean... at a major, I've never seen him that I can think of, like, just give you like a full "come on" yell of any kind. And the putt he made to win the Tour Championship, the yell he gave looked exactly like a Ryder Cup yell, and like it looked like a statement, like "I'm coming for you this week." He did bring it. He just ran out of steam at the end of it. I think he emotionally had spent. I think like 50% of emotional energy was spent on the eighth green alone.
Here's the good way to tell about, like, the self-awareness thing, character versus, like, Reed. It's like, when people were asking Rory about that after the 18th green, did you run out of steam? He was like, oh, yeah, I definitely did. And stuff. And then people asked Patrick Reed the same thing in the press conference. He's like, what are you talking about? I didn't run out of steam. I didn't run out of gas.
Play 18 more.
Just made a couple pars. Like, I don't... It's like...
I think we just started playing normal golf. And that's, birdie, birdie, eagle, birdie.
That's why we love Rory, is because Rory is, like, really self-aware. Like, I think he's one of the most self-aware athletes that they're, like, on the earth, to be honest. Like, at that level, certainly, who can sort of step outside himself and be like, oh, yeah, like, I was doing that for fun. I mean, one of my favorite things this week was that quote that, you know, was we all sort of... kind of retweeted, passed around, but when he got asked kind of that leading question, that sort of the thing that I think annoys me when some sports writers do, where it's like, aren't you afraid that you might have, you know, fired up the home crowd, or that you'll fire up
the Americans?
Was that
a Scottish reporter?
This is an American. And he's like, no worries at all. Like, I just bowed and said that, you know, enjoy the show, and we move on. And it was like, it was such a, like, drop it in your face kind of move, like, and we move on. Like,
but, all right. What would Gary Player think about Rory McIlroy's antics this week? Before you do the Gary Player, I'd like to point out that Rory, who you could at one point, so a fan yelled at him, like, he yanked one left, and a fan yelled, "Lay off the roids, Rory!" And he made like a gesture towards his body, like what? Like, you think this is a body of somebody on steroids? And you could see his abs through his shirt. So, like, he literally one of the most fit golfer on the active golfer on the planet right now. Sorry, Big Cat. He's the one that said,
"I thought you were going to say sorry, Gary Player."
Shut up. I should have. He's the one that ran out of steam, whereas Patrick Reed claims he did not run out of steam. I just want to point that out.
Hey, Patrick Reed's American made. Cheeseburgers, milkshakes, whatever. I like, by the way, I like how the U.S. just won its second Ryder Cup since 1999. And literally all we've talked about is Rory McIlroy for the first 10 minutes of this thing.
The man crush, at least for me, it's gotten to an uncomfortable level. I mean,
Chris, you said like along the lines of him being kind of self-aware and knowing he was playing a role. You said, you know, on several occasions he stopped and like chatted with you in between tee to green, kind
of
hanging out.
Can we talk about my favorite moment of the week? We haven't gotten to that.
Oh, shit. All right. Was your favorite moment of the week when Rory acknowledged Sully?
Yeah, go ahead and talk about it, Sully.
I tweeted the story, but I tweeted it as best I could, summed it up in one tweet. But I've met Rory very briefly at the memorial, and I think it was Friday morning or afternoon on the third hole, when Phil hit the big flop shot. We were out there, and he sees me again. They haven't even finished the hole yet. It was foursome, so it was Friday morning.
Saturday morning.
Yeah. And they haven't even finished the hole yet, and he sees me, kind of like makes eye contact and like head nods, and then like makes a weird gesture about the flop shot Phil hit. And we're like kind of like 10, 15 feet away, and I can't talk because like somebody's lining up a putt. So I just make some stupid gestures back at him.
Pointed at the ground.
I pointed at the divot. Like, oh, there's the divot. Like Rory would be impressed by the divot.
It was hilarious.
So I was just like, damn, this guy's not like even remotely nervous. Like, here he is, like beach, giving us this bravado show on every hole, looking like the most intense athlete on the planet. And then like afterwards, kind of joking about it. And even like today with Reed, like when they're finger wagging at each other and shushing, then they'd go up and high five and joke about it in between holes. So it was like an act or a theater to it. And he was so relaxed to the point that on Saturday afternoon, obviously, I was like begging for the Koepka DJ pairing.
I think you single handedly might have made that happen.
I think I kind of did. I think
does Davis Love's son follow you on Twitter or something?
give him something. We have to give him something.
Is Davis Love's son DL4? I'm serious. That guy.
No, I think his name's Drew, isn't it?
Okay, it's Drew. Okay,
yeah. He played at Bama, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
With JT.
Because yeah. I almost went up to him today, but I didn't know if he was a DL4.
Hey, DL4. Or, DL4. Hey, Quattro. So Rory and Peters are three up on DJ and Brooks, and I go back to 9T, and there's a lot of people following this group, and a lot of people following Rory, but to go back to 9T is a bit of a hike, and not a lot of like media people went back there. So I go back there, and no one else is sitting there, and I just like sat down on the bench pretty far away from the action, like 20 feet away, and Rory hits his drive, crushes one, recoils and just walks over and like tosses something away and just sits down on the bench right next to me. We've never had a conversation really in our lives. Looks over at DJ and Brooks. Again, he's three up on them and goes, "Hey, you got your wish."
Just trolling Sully.
Full trolling me. Like, this is the pair you wanted. I'm waxing them and I'm rubbing it in your face 8 holes into the match.
In the middle of the Ryder Cup.
In the middle of the Ryder Cup.
Real nervous.
Yeah, really nervous. Terrified. I lost my mind. I was like, I think I might be rooting for Europe at this point. Like, this is incredible.
I live there. Their best player is my favorite player. My favorite moment of the week, I think, might have been when Sully's soul left his body on...
Which time?
On the 16th hole on Friday, when Rory made the eagle putt to end his match.
I forgot to tweet that picture out because I didn't have Wi-Fi, but now I'm going to tweet it out.
From the 8th hole today?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Who were they playing on?
I don't even remember this moment. That's how many times my soul disappeared this week.
No, when he bowed. And
when he bowed. Oh, the look on my face. That feels like a week ago at this point.
Yeah, it does feel like a week ago. But Sully came in just... I mean, you've been inside the ropes a couple times now?
Yeah, a couple times.
So pretty innocent to the whole experience, and he will never be the same. It was like me and Kevin at the Masters seeing Spieth dump a couple in the water on 12. It was just a violation, really, of thousands of Americans at one time, what Rory did on 16 with the eagle to end it.
Can we just talk about like what we've seen like real quick at the majors this year? I mean, like, you know, the PGA we were all kind of meh about, but So
you didn't like Jimmy Walker's up and down on the 18 going to the PGA?
So up two putts.
Up and down and down.
Up and down, down.
At the Masters, we had a guy have one of the more horrific meltdowns, but then also like almost ace the 16th where we were standing there.
I thought that was going in. Okay. I still like.
So amazing moment there. We have DJ sticking it in the USGA's face with that shot into 18, and Rory like live tweeting
yeah,
us
that
in the moment,
amazing.
Like suck at the USGA. All right, and then we have
he added them too.
Yeah,
at USGA,
and then we have a stripe show in the British with Stenson and Mickelson, where it's like. You had to, Mickelson would have had to shoot 61 in the last day
worst
to win
ball 64.
To get into a playoff.
Yeah, just get into a playoff.
Or
right?
You would have won.
And then we'll skip the PGA because it was boring. And then we had the Ryder Cup this year. It's like this whole golf season was lit.
You missed the Olympics.
Oh, the Olympics. Excuse me.
Kuchar won bronze. I think.
I was going to make a joke about the FedEx Cup playoffs, but that actually did turn out to be pretty damn exciting at the end.
Yeah.
God, I seriously had like forgotten about like Rory taking my solo on 16 because he took it like 8 other times the rest of the week.
So I have a quick question. Uh-oh. Like, we really distilled this Ryder Cup down to like this Reed Rory stuff. Did we kind of? I mean, we kind of overlooked Mickelson a little bit. Like that match is like an all timer, and I think you know sometimes walking around inside the ropes, you don't get the full broadcast or you're not seeing the highlights, and obviously we were. Consumed by every move that Reed and Rory and like them exchanging blows and not so much the shots but what they would do after the putt went in the hole where you're just all like that's when you perked up. It's not like after you struck the ball, it's like you got on your tippy toes when the ball went in the hole.
Yeah,
like, what are they gonna do now?
You froze like what we got.
Sometimes you lose perspective on what's going on behind them. Mickelson played like an all-time match. It's only got a half point. And he was pretty solid, you know, the other 2 days, and with all the backdrop of the task force BS and stuff.
I
just feel like we're kind of losing sight of what he.
I think that this Ryder Cup was so big for his legacy. I mean, I know from like having conversations throughout the week and stuff that when Phil basically like knifed Tom Watson in front of everyone, that moment was like. There's sort of this divide about how people feel about that. A lot of people think, oh, it was so not classy. Like, how could you do that in front of everyone? Like, you should have handled it differently. And even Phil, like, sort of made a joke about it, like, tonight when people asked him, you know, some idiot opened his mouth or whatever. But the truth is that to get to where we are tonight, that moment kind of had to happen. Like, it was
publicly?
Painful.
I think
it had to happen publicly.
Yeah.
I think that if it hadn't happened publicly, there would have been too much sort of internal sort of, you know, just momentum of like keeping the way that it was. They would have kept sort of having, you know, guys like Ted Bishop pick, you know, guys who they grew up adoring, like Tom Watson. And there wouldn't have been like a Ryder Cup task force to sort of bring in people. I mean, like, look, Tiger and Phil have never been like particularly close. I don't think that's like anything anyone would pretend that otherwise. But they were kind of forced to like work together a little bit in this and like sort of help save American golf. And so Mickelson. Like, it's like a huge bet where you have to sort of basically trust your gut and say, I'm going to do this thing, and I'm not just doing this for me. And I think that Amy's sort of comments coming to a couple of reporters this week sort of validate this, but, like, he felt like, okay, like, if I'm going to stick up for everyone in this team room, I'm the big enough dog in the room that I'll take the heat for it.
Yeah.
And he knew that, I'm sure, he was going to get ripped for it. Maybe not quite to the degree that he did, but he stuck up and said, you know what? This isn't working, and we got to figure out a new way about this. And if this hadn't worked out this week, he would have been the lightning rod for all the criticism.
Do you think if it hadn't worked out this week that he would never get captain?
It's so tough to keep him like from getting a shot at being captain. You know, who knows? I mean,
Hall of Famer, PGA champion.
You figure like, another 10 years, whoever the leadership is, the PGA would have sort of gradually been phased out. I think he would have gotten a chance eventually, but you never know. I mean,
but now he's going to get like 6 in a row.
Phil would have seceded.
Okay.
He would have started his own country with Patrick Reed, probably.
Here is a theory that the best Ryder Cup captaincy that you could put together might be a co-captaincy where Phil is the captain and Tiger is the co-captain, and Phil has to talk to the media every day, and Tiger just does the pairings and like looks over spreadsheets and like walks around in a cart. Tiger would love that. Phil would love that.
Phil would like talking to the media every single day?
Yeah, just about, yeah. pulled in court after every session. And I mean, and you know what? Like, that's kind of a cool thing to think that they sort of both understand their strengths and weaknesses. And, like, you know, I mean, that's kind of what a lot of people think maybe happened in some ways this week. That, like, Davis had to make the ultimate call, and I think both of them respected that. But, you know, every time that Davis talked about it, he sort of brought it up. You know, if I said something, Phil was on board with it, and he was going to go on, you know, with it, and I consulted Tiger on everything, and we were all sort of in a texting group talking or whatever. So
texting group. They have their own WhatsApp, they do, right? My question about all of this is, like, we've been talking about, and Phil talked about this after the matches on Sunday night. He said, we've got this foundation now. Like, we've started something. And I guess my question is, like...
By the way, Davis talked about this in the 18th green. Phil was talking about how things are going to play out in Paris on the 18th green.
Yeah, yeah. He's the best.
Like, saying, these are the matchups. He's got
pairings. But, like, what exactly were they going... Like, what were they trying to accomplish? Like, was it just succession of, like, okay, vice captains become captains, and, like, this is how we do things generally, or like, because, like, was there issue that things have just been done haphazardly and you never know what you're getting? Because that's sort of what it felt like.
I think that's all it sounds like. Kevin alluded to with the Bishop, just Ted Bishop, PGA pro, like, kind of picking the guy however he wants to run it. I think, like, Shane Bacon's podcast with Azinger kind of alluded to this, where he would say, like, yeah, Corey Pavin never called me for anything. I don't even know, like, what they did or, you know, how they operated. It just seems like you just get jerked around from every 2 years, and you don't really do anything until you arrive that week. That captain does all his, like, PR stuff and, you know, does the promotional visits and promotes the Ryder Cup for a year, and then the players show up on, like, Sunday, and, you know, it's just different every 2 years, whereas the Europeans know exactly kind of what they're getting into.
I don't think you should be able to be a Ryder Cup captain if you haven't been a vice captain already.
Makes sense.
That's
fair.
That's, you have to, like, and maybe have done it, like, twice, you know, maybe. I think we're all sort of thinking that, you know, next time around that Furyk or Stricker...
Or Bubba.
Or, you know... The amount of, like, fast-paced decisions... I mean, clearly listen to Davis this week where, like, they had to make a bunch of decisions, and the stress and the pressure was on, and, like, they were furiously texting, and Davis was like, oh my God, Tiger, what do I do?
That was the best part. When he was like,
imagine,
Tiger, help me.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, Bubba making those under pressure decisions about whether to sit DeChambeau and Patrick Rogers? You know?
We could do a whole separate podcast on the things that I was wrong about going up into this, but I do think I just didn't picture all of that ego working together. Mm-hmm. Talk about Tiger. I'm not saying Love necessarily has a big ego, but Tiger, Love, Phil is a playing captain. Yeah. And then, Phil.
Air quotes is what Kyle just did there.
And we have Furyk mixed in, which, again, there could be some issues as far as captain selection. We have a vice captain guy that, again, Love was on the tip of Love's tongue for every press conference you could imagine. And then you throw in Bubba at this last second. I was like, there's no way this can actually work. There's too much going into people wanting to play. And it did. Everything worked. I think his captain's picks worked out. I don't know what their final records were. Ended up being a great positive to the team. I think DJ was the only guy that had a losing record. Am I right in saying that? I could be wrong.
We were so furious that DJ was sitting.
Yeah.
A match. And it turned out DJ's game was kind of meh. Like,
but I still think that was, I don't like outcome based.
Sure, that's fair.
Like,
you're right.
Like,
I'm agreeing.
Like, looking back on things,
and that's like the way we view Reed's performance today. Like, Reed would have got skunked by Phil today. Like, as much as we are loving how Reed played,
or Sergio, you mean?
Yeah. But either way, I'm just saying, like, the way Phil played versus way Reed played, and we're just kind of glancing over how Phil played today.
I thought that was the only mistake, was sitting DJ. Like, the only thing that I was like, I don't know. I felt like everything else was...
Yeah.
He almost screwed it up by benching Spieth and Reed, and I actually might have benched them or broken them up.
After they blew that Saturday morning match.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all right, so people were mocking a little bit when I said that, you know, going into the week, that Reed went into the meeting on Sunday and said, I'm playing all five matches and I'm only playing with Jordan.
Like, he told Big Cat, you're not sitting me.
He told Tiger Woods, do not sit me. I'm not sitting any of the matches. That's the quote. Like, how do you sit a guy that does that? His record is was 5-1-2 in the Ryder Cup at that point. He's 25 years old at this point, and he has the bravado to walk into Davis Love and say, I'm playing all five matches. Not like...
Forget Love.
He didn't say, I want to play all five matches. Tiger was on his side at this point, though. Yeah, like, that's so true. He didn't have to fight that. I think Love wanted to sit everyone for one session. Not the worst strategy.
Yeah.
Because look at the Euros. If you look at, I don't know how exactly the five guys that played all five matches today. So Rose lost, Stenson won,
yeah.
Rory lost, Peters won, and Garcia have. So
he said they split, that was the method they used in Medina, and it gave him a 10-6 lead. And he felt like, you know, it was too hard to sort of say, he said there's four guys back at the clubhouse who really want to play. I felt like I should have given him a chance, and Tiger was like, no, you got to send my guys back out. And that was what was cool. Like, that's how you know that it was, like, kind of pods, but not quite really, is that Tiger was the guy basically saying,
yeah. Semi-pods.
No, these are my guys. I trust them. You got to send them back out. They're going to play great. And
what'd you guys think of Tiger this week? I thought he was, like, a little odd. Like, he was really, really kind of understated and did not... He had no real kind of personality. He didn't really celebrate. He didn't kind of emote at all. He just oddly, I think at the start of the week, because we haven't seen him publicly, you know, he does a couple appearances, like a congressional. At the start of the week, we were like, oh my gosh, it's Tiger. But then, like, when the matches started, he was just kind of like another guy on the cart. It was, like, kind of astonishing. It was really weird. And then even the victory press conference, he was another guy on the dais. He got his own question.
Kind of.
Jimmy Furyk and Stricker didn't get questions, but like Tiger, you would think any other press conference, they're all for Tiger. Strick,
even Tom Lehman.
I thought the same thing, because when we were there on Thursday or Wednesday, I forget which day, we had just arrived, and Tiger was just watching Kuchar hit balls on the range. We were going to go walk around, and we were like, we have to stay here.
Big
Tiger,
cat.
He's standing. All he was doing was standing.
Drinking a cup of tea. Yeah. Let's watch him.
By Sunday night, I actually like looked at him a bit during the press conference, just looked over and was like, it's amazing how Tiger is just a guy in this room right now.
Yeah.
Like, he has this presence about him when you see him out on the golf course, but like, you brought him in that room, and it was just bizarre. Like, for me, if I had to ask 20 questions, if I had an allotment of 20 questions to anyone, 19 of them first would have gone to Patrick Reed in that room, and maybe I would have like thrown one to Tiger. Like,
but that's how it was on the course too. Yeah, like, he was walking with Reed and Rory for part of Sunday, and obviously Reed and Spieth for the first 2 days, and we're all in this like inside the ropes together, and like he's just like with everyone. Yeah. Like like people were chanting Patrick Reed's name, and Tiger was like hanging out with Hootie and
Noda.
Well, Noda. I mean, it was bizarre.
This was my days are all messed up. This was yesterday when we were walking around, and on the fifth hole, for some reason Hunter Mahan is inside the ropes.
Saturday, with the media bib.
Yeah, he had the same bib on that we had on.
Hunter really wanted to see in the action. He was probably going to file some dispatches for fan sided, or I don't know.
The Players Tribune.
might take from the Inside the Ropes by Hunter Mahan. The Players Tribune.
And so he comes up and starts talking to Big Cat. Patrick Reed looks over and is like, what the hell are you doing here to Hunter Mahan? Anyways, Mahan and Reed start talking, and there's like, I don't know. We're standing pretty close to it's me and Kevin standing close to Tiger and Mahan.
By the way, if Keegan Bradley found out that Hunter Mahan was inside the ropes with a media bib and he didn't think of that as a way to get to the Ryder Cup, you know, it would kill him.
Thank God he could unpack his suitcase.
Keegan's media bib is in his suitcase. By the way, is Mahan like, was this like a layover on his way to the web.com finals?
Whoa!
I knew the text would get hot.
Oh,
I didn't
my
know
God.
This would be Hunter Mahan.
Cowboy on web.com. Cowboy on cowboy crime.
Somebody take away my beer.
One and a half beers in, Porter's.
So we're talking.
Go ahead, you tell.
No. Well, so we're standing there, you and I, and like, it was almost like a little bit happenstance. We didn't actually like. We weren't so creepy that we made this happen, like, on our own.
I have an app on my phone, actually, that just shows me where Tiger is.
It just picks me. But we turned, and I was standing, like, 6 inches from Tiger. And And you were right next to me, and we, and the crowd kind of moved away, and neither one of us moved because we were like,
it looked so bizarre. Like, so there's like 15 to 20 people in the general area as Spieth was hitting his shot. Mm-hmm. Spieth hits a shot, and the rest of everyone started walking. Mm-hmm. And me, you, and Sean Zach from golf.com just stood next to these two, completely out of place. Like, so obvious what we were doing, just standing there eavesdropping, not talking to each other, not taking pictures, no. Nothing. Just stood there eavesdropping. It wasn't a very interesting conversation. I'm talking about mud balls for the most part.
Mud ball.
Tiger's talking about the fairways were all weird. And then, but you remember he was like, have you seen this Peters kid? This Peters kid could hit the hell out of the ball. And he's like, dropping F-bombs, and you're like, oh my god, Tiger just dropped an F-bomb. Like, but it was great. It was like, it's so fun to see him. To me, honestly, it was really fun to see him in such a different environment and different role. Like, I love seeing Tiger sort of have to, like, change and grow older a little bit. Like, I've always said for years and years and years that I admit fully that I did not appreciate Tiger in his prime.
Yeah.
And I have regrets about that now because his personality rubbed me the wrong way. I was always kind of more of a Phil guy. And now, like, I miss him for the game's sake. But even then, I always said, the Tiger that I always want to cheer is not the Goliath for. It's not the Goliath. It's the guy who someday is 46, 47 years old and puts together a back nine birdie run at Augusta that makes me think about being 25 years old and seeing him, you know, win freaking 13 whatever in a row. It's just, so being next to him, like, and seeing him throughout the week kind of have to be someone who was totally not Tiger Woods was fun. Like, I was walking, you know, next to him on a hole, and Jordan hit a loose iron shot, and just hearing Tiger go, cut, cut, come on, ball, cut. Like, cheering for someone else's ball was kind of a cool thing. Like, yeah, it's just like,
that's,
wow. Like,
that's cool.
That's awesome.
Dad, look at how much power he still has. All he's doing is rooting for the ball, and we're like, that's the coolest thing ever.
I mean, Frank, you know, look at all four of us watch Tiger watch Kuchar hit balls on the range. Like, that shows you that he still matters.
Yeah.
No, whenever Tiger, like, club twirls on 16 when he's, like, 47 and trying to beat Spieth for the... What Masters would that be? Like the 2022 Masters?
Yeah.
Can I be your Twitter followers?
Yeah, I'll be dead. Okay. You know what? Actually, I've never been more confident that I can survive anything on a golf course after this week. Because, I mean, we've just been geeking out about this. But, like, I don't know. I'm not really... This is only really my second tournament I've ever gone inside the ropes on ever. To do it at a Ryder Cup... So the first time I did it, it kind of ruined golf for me, like attending a golf tournament, like outside of it.
It does.
Now this like ruined other PGA Tour events. Yeah. Like what I tried to do all week, I told you guys this earlier, is whenever there was like a really big moment, like Reed making a big birdie or DJ or Koepka making a big birdie, I would try to walk to the next hole somewhat near them. Not necessarily like in their way or right next to them or, you know, I wasn't trying to get a selfie with them. I just kind of wanted to feel what that was like to walk through a tunnel of people that are yelling and supporting you and everyone being the one rooting for you. Mm-hmm. And it made my hair stand up on my arms like several times. Like it was truly incredible to just hear the USA. Yeah, I don't know. And people were doing it for Rory even too at times. And I just thought that was such an unbelievable experience. There's so many times we just ended up looking over at each other like, did that seriously just happen? Did you see him shush him? Did you see him bow? Like, there were things that we missed. It was just incredible.
I think the hard part about a Ryder Cup is you don't, like, at a regular event, you kind of know who to follow because you know who the leaders are and you know who's playing well. And here, like, I didn't know to follow Phil and Sergio today because, like, you didn't know that they were going to go shoot a best ball 58. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's... Sunday was really difficult to figure out where to go. We ran to 18. We all ran to 18 to watch the final putt, which is there a more anticlimactic ending than Ryan Moore two-putting for par to win the Ryder Cup?
Did he even putt? I don't think it even went down. Like Westwood.
Did Westwood give it to him? I couldn't see.
So Westwood hit it in the bunker, and then he hit it long out of the bunker. And then at that point, Westwood had to make a birdie to win the hole to have that point. It was a have already.
Yeah.
And so, like, when he didn't hole his bunker shot, it was over. Like, the U.S. had won the Ryder Cup at that point. But then he putted out, his, and then Ryan hit another putt, and it never went in. At that point, like, Westy took off his hat, yeah. And then they just, so it was like, it was literally the most anticlimactic that it could have possibly yeah. been.
Yes.
Did you, and did you stay for the putt, for DJ's putt on 16?
No, he missed it though. I heard
he did. I heard so it. I think Shane Ryan and I are the only ones on the ground that saw DJ miss the putt. So if DJ makes the putt on 16, the U.S. would have effectively clinched the cup. That yeah. would have guaranteed
but
a half.
But they wouldn't have celebrated.
They would not have celebrated, but it would have been the win.
Yeah,
he missed that, and Moore had already hit his second into 18.
How did you make it back?
We sprinted two holes. We sprinted.
Did Shane make it back?
Shane beat me, actually. I had a backpack on.
In the end, though, it was like there was no real kind of instant celebration on the green.
It was
like,
weird.
They're definitely like the crowd gathered and the crowd swelled. It was a little oddly.
It was really fun to be. So I was like, again, like kind of lurking and like trying to listen to conversations without being a creep about it. But like, so I was kind of hanging around like Phil and Spieth and like all these guys. And it was fun to watch them like look at the board and try to figure out where the final point was going to come. And Phil saying, I don't really care. I want us to win by a lot.
Oh, I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah.
Phil had the
Phil
over.
Had the over.
This is important. The fact that Phil willed that putt in on 18 to me was such a great ending. Like,
yeah, I'm bummed that I missed that.
It was cool. He looked over it for so long.
He wanted
it so badly, and I think he felt like, you know, this might matter. So, yeah. Like, if I lose a point here, you know, after playing this well, I'm going to be really kind of devastated by it. And he stalked that putt as long as I've seen him stalk a putt since the 2004 Masters, putt that he rolled in to yeah. win his first major. And he willed it in. You know, Tiger used to will putts in. That's exactly what happened on that. It was a downhill, kind of, you had to put it outside the hole and bring yeah. it back in. And Sergio, you know, again, makes putts this week and never anywhere else.
Is it okay that I love Sergio?
Of course.
I love Sergio. Yeah, no, I love Rory. I love Rose. I love Stan. I love all those guys. Those guys are great.
Europeans are great. Like, their personalities are awesome. Like,
yeah.
Thomas Peters was so funny. This is the first time I ever really even knew who Thomas Peters was other than a name. And he hits nuclear weapon grades plutonium drives.
Just throwing against the wall.
It's unbelievable. And even Rory was like, you know, isn't this kid a stud or what? Yeah. You know,
he said that to you.
Yeah, between what day?
15 and 16.
Between 15 and 16, what day?
I think it was Friday
afternoon. Yeah. It was almost like Rory was seeing this for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we're walking between 15 and 16. Peters had just drained a putt on 15. And Rory just looks over at me and just goes, the crowd's going nuts. I mean, the crowd was cheering and yelling at Rory and whatnot. And he just goes, this guy's sick. And says that to me as he's walking. And I was like, I mean, we can all see that. Is this the first time you're seeing this? Like, even Rory was like genuinely shocked by it. But
it might be like, how often does Rory? Rory plays the European Tour just enough to keep his yeah. card so he can play in the Ryder Cup.
He beat JT at the 2013 NCAA.
Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
Well, because I mean,
why are you doing this to me?
It shows his greatness.
Why are you doing this to me?
Point.
Why would you bring this up?
What were you gonna say?
No, I just Peter's like. Prior, like, most notorious moment was just snapping a club in two and then throwing both right. into
greatest
the bush. Tour
sauce
you got a lot of retweets out of that.
Yes, I
did.
As the ball landed, like, on top of the flag and both pieces going into the gorse.
Gorse.
At Royal Truist.
Shout out to Gorse the horse, by the way.
Goes, you know, undefeated as a rookie, so...
He was great. He's a big winner out of this week.
What do we think about the job that Clark did? Do we feel like he was a good captain, an average captain? Did he just kind of get run into a buzzsaw?
I think it's a system at this point. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I just, from that, like, you know, defeat press conference, I guess, the after Ryder Cup press conference, I just totally got a vibe that, like, this is an entire system, mm-hmm. and whosever turn it is just kind of the guy who rotates the spot. And these guys just, this Euro Tour and this group just have it so locked in. All the assistant captains up there on the back row kind of flanking him. And it's like the luck of the draw. Either you know, you usually get a winning team if you're the Euros. And he got one of the losing ones. I mean, I guess some would argue that Faldo kind of went rogue and did his own thing.
Some would argue.
I just got a sense that, like, Clark was kind of a, you know, the next guy in the system. And I'm not sure he did anything exceptionally well or bad.
I agree.
I love, and I'm gonna cherry pick what he did to make the arguments in the future that, like, you can use a captain's pick on a rookie. You can do that. He might go 4-1, and he might be a guy you're going to want to use in a lot of Ryder Cups. Defaulting to Westwood and Keimer, and I don't know have their records in front of me, in hindsight, looks like very questionable. I get why he did that, considering they already had 6 other rookies on the team. Yeah. But
I wonder what Russell Knox was doing this week.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, Russell Knox was not changing definitely this not. Ryder Cup.
Yeah, but who's blowing? His hands were tied behind his back. It's not like there's a bunch of Thomas Peterses out there.
No, that's very true. And that's why, so I went on the golf.com hot take podcast in March, and I said that the United States is going to win the Ryder Cup 16.5, 11.5, and we're going to win it for
life. I said Rory's never going to win the Masters. Can I take that back?
And I said, we're going to like basically dominate for the next decade. And that's the exact reason why, is there not a lot of Thomas Peters out there. Mm-hmm. Matthew Fitzpatrick, I want to believe, is the next great European player. This week is kind of like, Chris Wood, come on.
I may never see him again.
Chris Wood is like the homeless man's Thomas Peters.
He's the Brett Wetterich of the Europeans.
Wow, okay. No, I'm
sorry. All right. Hot take.
I feel like the European guys have guys who sometimes shine brightly and then Ryder Cups and then don't make another Ryder Cup team. Like, it strikes me as like, so we were talking a lot about like
Pre-Jorik Johansson. What was his name?
Jamie Donaldson. Maybe we might not see
Jamie Donaldson was unbelievable at Glen Eagles. Nicholas Kolsarts made 8 birdies and an eagle against Tiger and Stricker and never made another Ryder Cup team.
Go with what's in your pants.
Go with what's in your pants. Like, the all-time great quote. Like, you know, the Molinari brothers both played on Ryder Cups and then never again. Like,
Flying Molinaris.
What? How come they haven't found? You know, I guess how we're criticizing the Europeans like they've done a poor job winning.
Why have they only won 8 times?
8 out of the last 11.
But you know, it just that's what's fascinating about them. But also, what I guess maybe pretends down the road of like, well, you have to rebuild every single time out. If you can't, like, rely... I mean, their old lines are getting old. We all know that, like, Stenson's amazing. If you stand next to him and watch him hit irons, it's unreal. Rose is still, like, a great player. Sergio's obviously
a great
player.
How old is Rose? Is he, like, 34, 35? I
think 17 at the 98 British Open.
So, 35?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
That's not that old.
Yeah.
But, like, Westy's old.
Sergio's 30.
Westy might be done with the Ryder Cup after this.
Yeah, I think this is a good chance. This is probably Westy's last as a player.
I just said he's washed. He looked pretty washed.
Did you hear what he... It was funny. They were criticizing... The European players were oddly criticizing the setup today, which was, like, kind of came off as sort of sour grapes, whatever. And Westwood said, I'm kind of hoping it's a senior PGA in about 10 years.
So I think they were all pretty salty, just about. Obviously, they don't lose very often. I'm not sure they know.
I mean, let's in case anyone missed that, like, both Rose and Rory were a little bit annoyed that the setup was too easy.
Rose was more than a little bit annoyed.
Rory was annoyed. Rose was pissed.
Rose was like, you put this on a tee, or I'm not even sure the question was supposed to go there, and he was happy to crush
it. Rose called it the equivalent of a pro-am. And said the pin on 17 was a joke. There was only 3 birdies all day at 17, so I'm not sure like what exactly made it a joke.
I don't even know what that means.
Really. Why would you know? We all know that like Azinger like has sort of talked a little bit about you know how his strategy was to put the pins in the middle of the greens because the Europeans are so used to like firing at tucked pins or whatever, and they like to sort of show off and their manly sort of attack. And also, you can protect a lead better if the pins are in the middle of the greens because both players can make birdies. And so that was his strategy. And it's clear that Love kind of picked up on that strategy and was like, yeah, if we're And if we're leading, we're going, putting the pins where both guys can hang. You know, you don't have to, like, get nervy over certain swings where you're going to a back pin. But they were criticizing it on 16, too, saying that all the pins were away from the water. 16 was such a great hole. I mean, how did that sort of strike you guys? Like,
well,
why would... What's the point at that point?
Yeah.
You've won all these Ryder Cups, basically, like, the U.S., you know, peeing down their leg in crucial moments... And you lose one where they outplay you.
Yeah, I just didn't. I didn't think that was the my biggest takeaway from the press conference.
Not
first
at all.
Of all, it was mostly just kind of jovial. Like
those I think guys, they were in very good spirits. As we should say that, like Rose, as I said, like on Twitter, Rose was like saying to Patrick Reed, like, "I want to see you with a drink in your hand later." Yeah. And like,
why is Rose Irish now?
I know. I'm sorry. That was a misfire.
I still want to know what Gary plays.
Yeah,
thinks,
Gary's good.
Thinks about the
Gary's
about the crowd.
We'll talk crowd.
The
vibe in that press conference was just kind of like, I looked at those guys and I was like, this is kind of why these guys win a lot. I just loved the way they were interacting and just having fun with it. And they were not, and I know Tron has been making this point too, like, those guys don't care as much as we do about this thing. They really don't. They don't care that much about losing. They don't fear losing it.
They don't fear losing. I think they care. I mean,
I'm sorry.
Rory throw his putter at his bag after losing to Patrick Reed, you'd know that he cares.
Care is the wrong word. Yeah.
They don't fear it.
Yeah, they're not fear losing it. And they just took it as like, I think they knew they had the inferior team standing up there. And
they all had Estella.
Yeah, just they all had some beers, chilling. They were still laughing, having fun, and
Rory's making fun of American beer.
Yeah.
Rory was making fun of Ian Poulter.
Rory's making fun of his own height.
Danny Willett was all too happy to just say, "How'd you play this? Or what was your first experience?"
Shit.
And then he followed up and I said, "Would you like to expand on that?" And he said, "Really shit."
I mean, I don't know how they made it. Like, it was such a contrast from 2014, right?
Yeah,
the losers.
Yeah,
like, they just made
so
it entertaining and just cracking at each other.
Oh, totally.
Think about when we lost in 2014. Yeah. It's like Furyk, like, with his head in his hand.
Mayhem.
You know, head in his hand.
Mayhem. Yeah.
Just
mayhem.
Michael
Kuchar just staring off. Did you ever see the Kuchar, like, screenshots of Kuchar as he's next to Watson while Watson's, like, you know, about to bite the microphone. And Kuchar's just... like, looking around. He's, like, gazing at the wall. It's Phil's, like, just... dropping bows.
My favorite thing about that whole thing is where, like, Phil says what he says. None of us were involved in any decision. And someone says, you know, "Oh, you know, you're kind of taking a shot at Tom right here." And he says, "Oh, I'm sorry you took it that way. I didn't mean it that way at all."
That was,
like,
how did you take it that way?
The Euros were just the opposite of
Well,
that.
And
not that they, you know, they hadn't been on, like, this losing streak, you know. They had a reason to be jovial, but it was just such a contrast.
Yeah,
well, Sergio was like joking about, you know, "What did you learn from the crowd today?" "I've learned I've never won a major."
Yeah. So I'm definitely aware that I've never won a major. It was fantastic. I think those guys knew the deck was stacked against them. They had to rely really, really hard on those top four guys. And then Peters ended up becoming this fifth guy that played all five matches. I would be shocked if that was the plan to start the week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just felt like they were probably like, these guys should have been beating us for a long time anyways. Like, this finally just happened.
If you only watched the golf, like the Ryder Cup, if this was your first thing, how could you not come away and be like, "Oh, Patrick Reed and Thomas Peters must have five majors between
them"? Yeah. God, Peters has got stones. All right, let's talk about the crowd.
Okay.
Several incidents in it. I have my thoughts on what we saw out there. I think we were kind of at the advantage of being able to hear exactly what the players were hearing and what was directed at them. Brennan, do you think, if someone mentioned to you, like, what happened with the crowd at Hazeltine, what would your first, like, answer be? What would your first response be?
I mean, I think everything needs to be kind of consumed through the lens of the Ryder Cup. It's really an adversarial, totally out of the box event that we need to kind of shift the goalposts for our expectations on. Now, I'm not making excuses. It was pretty bad, I thought, but, you know, again, I hadn't covered a Ryder Cup before, so I don't have a frame of reference. Maybe at Gleneagles, some of that stuff was happening. I heard, like, you know, random reference Jim Gallagher on the Golf Channel this morning, talking about how he was hit with a beer can and whatever that was at the Belfry in 1980-something or 90, early 90s. Like, I think a lot of this stuff has been going on. This is my first Ryder Cup. I think it was probably pretty bad. The Europeans seemed really, really irritated by it and thought it was way over the line. But kept falling back on that. 99% are fine, and, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's the case. It was an extreme crowd.
I thought their answers in the press conference were very interesting. Yeah, they were, so they said, like, you know, it was a very small majority, and, like, you know, whatever, and the American players were stepping up. They made sure to make it clear, like, the right people were making the right steps. We have the utmost respect for the American players, the captains. Right. Everyone was chiming in, trying to calm it down. Me being out there, I didn't feel like it was that small of a majority that was being obnoxious.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it was bad at times.
It was the crowd.
It was bad Saturday for sure.
Yeah. Saturday was really
bad. Sunday was much more subdued, and I think that was a really good moment when Rory was trying to hit his shot in the second shot, and someone Yahoo said something during his swing, and the whole crowd, like, turned on that person.
Boo.
It was like, get him out of here, boo.
Yeah. So
that was a good moment. That was like, but seriously, like, before that, like, it was scary when the guy yelled, you know, suck a D to Rory. I was right there, and, you know, Rory was furious about it, and he kind of went back and stood at the rope line and pointed at the guy, and it was, like, a scary moment. I thought, oh, my gosh, like, what if this guy, like, rushes over here and just takes a swing at him? Like, this is going to be a horrible thing. But Rory was like, get him out of here, scared him right now. Like, he was furious, and understandably so. And then he stripped a 3-iron to 6 feet. It was what's funny about the whole crowd thing
is
what was funny with
he should have done the full suck a D motion right at him.
What was funny with the whole crowd thing is that, like, it never seemed to catch on that, like, they made him better. Like, every single time they sort of tried to get under his skin.
And he even and, told
like,
him. He even said it.
I mean, it's just like him clapping back and singing the second line of Sweet Caroline was an epic all-time
amazing moment.
Like, that was awesome. I still can't believe that he did that. And I think it's so weird that they taunt him and tease him about a woman that he broke up with and then ended up with someone that he clearly likes better. Like, it's just a weird, it's a weird sort of taunt. I don't know. Like,
I my favorite, since we're talking about Rory again, I thought the best thing he
all things lead to Rory.
The best thing he did all week was after the cup was over, everybody's on 18, Europeans, Americans, and one of y'all said this, but it was really eerie on 18 because nobody was cheering. It was over, and the crowd was, like, silent, and it was odd. Mm-hmm. And he tried to, like, start a USA chant. And he was doing it, like, semi-facetiously, like, why are you guys not making noise? But also, like, semi-seriously, as if to say, like, the show's over, like, the performance is over.
Yeah.
We can go back to
cooled down about, you know, he said he threw his putter and after it was clear the U.S. is going to win, he was a really good sport about everything. I mean, he hugged Davis. He hugged, like, all the U.S. players. He went over, and I was talking to J.B. Holmes, and he stuck his head in and said, you know, guys, where's the champagne? He said, I know you haven't done this in a while, but Jesus, do this right.
Yeah.
You've given up on the Rory accent.
Yeah. And that was such, and it was not like a trolley, like, sort of jerk move. It was like, come genuine on, guys, Rory. Like, celebrate it. Like, jump around, have a good time. Like, you earned this. You worked so hard.
Part of me thinks it was too, like, this to the crowd. Like, seriously, guys, you did all this for 3 days, your team wins it, and I don't hear anything now at this point. It was bizarre.
It was weird. I think there are, like, a couple levels here with the crowd. Like, there's obviously, like, the yelling and the backswing and, like, the heckling as you're, like, addressing.
The backswing thing is...
Yeah, as you're, like, soling the putter to address, you know, like, the heckling, that kind of stuff that happened to Sergio a fair amount. Like, that's, like, over the line. I think then, like, there's a level below that where, like, this was, like, very prevalent. This was not 99%. This was the majority of cheering bad shots, yelling at balls to hook in the woods, hook into the water, like, way right, up, chunky. Like, there was so much of that.
There was.
Like, and I think that's somewhere in the middle of being, this is the Ryder Cup, you're cheering against somebody.
See, I'm fine on that. I'm good on that.
Yeah, I don't want...
I hate the pre-shot stuff, the really personal stuff. The thing I hate the most about it is how incredibly unfunny 99% of it is. Yeah. So uncreative, and you look over to somebody that does it, and they say it, and they get a little smirk on their face, and they look over to their friends, like, did you hear what I said? I said mashed potatoes. It's like,
yeah.
Nobody thinks you're, like, creative. I heard, like, five creative insults.
Like, in 2014, when it was foggy out, and they were teeing off, and somebody told, they couldn't see their balls, and so somebody told Furyk to follow his nose. And he laughed at it. That's because funny. If it's funny, and it's,
yeah,
like, sure. I mean, it's like anything that we write on Twitter or whatever, like, if it's funny, and if even if it's insulting, like, people can laugh at it.
Yeah. But the stuff like in between holes that was said a lot of times, the jokes about their personal lives, and that's in the short conversation I had with Rory, I was like, is this crowd, like, what do you think of this crowd compared to Medina? And he's like, yeah, it's probably a little worse. I mean, it's really this, like, when they start saying personal this stuff, but they know stuff about your personal life. That's when it's kind of crossing the line. Yeah. And it's really, that's really fair. Hard to disagree that's with fair. That. I mean, yeah. So think back to 2014. Patrick Reed, of all people, to insult their playing ability in this event, missed a short putt, I think an afternoon four-ball or foursomes, I forget which one it was, that caused them to have the match. It was a short putt on the 16th green, they ended up having the match. The next day, when he was about to tee off, somebody yelled, did you practice your putting, Patrick? And, like, everyone, like, backed off, and like, oh, whoa, and that was a big deal. That wouldn't have registered on the radar of this entire week.
No.
That wouldn't have been the top 100
of things. Part and parcel of, like, every single shot.
Yeah.
Like, that was, you know, multiple.
I mean, I think you guys were up with the Rory match, but I was with I guess it was Saturday morning, when someone yelled at Rose to get out of the way as Stenson was bringing the putter back, or whatever, and then they dropped a couple F-bombs on Henrik after that. Jeez. And Rose was furious. Like, Rose went over to the rope line and tried to confront a person. And that's when I talked to him after the match, and he said, I think they need to start thinking about the future of this event. Like, yeah. You know.
They really do.
You know, their wives are there. Like, it's a really personal thing. And that's, it's like, you don't... Your family's there. You don't just feel like concerned for yourself. You feel concerned for your parents, your family who are inside the rope line with you. They're having to hear a lot of that stuff. And I don't know. It's hard. I think it's hard to have this discussion and have it resonate at all outside the golf world, because what you have to deal with as a professional athlete in the NBA or in the NFL is so much worse than what you have to deal with in golf. But in golf, it's so much more personal because you're right. The fans are right there. You have to walk through the fans to get to the next hole. They can literally, if they want to, reach out and touch you and, like, punch you in the face. And the only thing that prevents them from doing so is the social contract that we all sort of sign off on. And so I could see where it could get really scary in that instance. Now,
Bethpage, you have to cancel.
It is.
I was surprised that didn't happen more often, to be honest. Like, that didn't actually happen. Like you said, the social contract. Like, walking, you're inside the ropes. Like, honestly, I'm not trying to kind of, you know, ignore the privilege we had of walking inside the ropes. But it gave you the perspective of, like, oh my God, I'm walking with whoever, Rory's girlfriend or Niall, you know, this one direction. He's got, like, 35 million
followers
on
Twitter. By the way, everybody kept screaming Niall. I thought they were saying Kyle.
I couldn't believe, like, one of these people hadn't grabbed somebody or, like, you know, tried to rush that. Like, they're walking literally within inches on the ropes.
I think what's complicated, though, is that the U.S. had so much pressure. If you like golf in the United States, you have had some sort of Ryder Cup anxiety. Like, you wanted to stop being embarrassed by the Europeans, to stop, like, Rory being able to sort of troll you and say, like, oh, they're not the best. They might be the best team, but they got to put together the best task force. Like, that stings if you're an American golf fan, because it's true. Like, and so that, everything like that ratchets up the intensity a little bit more and makes the American fans so badly want to stop being embarrassed. And frankly, the current political environment contributes to some of that. It's like there's a sort of sense of nationalism of, like, you know, we don't want to be sort of embarrassed by other countries or whatever. And that if you're a golf fan and you also happen to sort of follow that election stuff, that's all that sort of coursing through your veins. And so it's kind of...
It's getting to deplorable range here. Let's be very careful here. 50-some minutes.
I thought it was interesting that even by, like, the end of it all, and obviously he was, like, toned down. Rory was kind of, I don't know, making excuses, but kind of explaining it away. Like, hey, if I was having tall boys before 8 a.m., 24-ounce beers, and, you know, by 4:30, 5 in the afternoon, I know I can, you know, I don't know what would be coming out of my mouth. Yeah, sure. And he's just like, he's talking about that, and, you know, they asked him, well, should they restrict alcohol sales? Like, nah, I don't know how you do that. With he was kind of, I don't know if he's explaining it away or saying it's acceptable, but he's, like, understood how it happened.
It goes back to his self-awareness. I think he also understands, like, the realities of things. Like, he's an American in so many ways. Right. He lives here. His
send him back to Florida. Did you guys hear that? Yeah. Somebody said that to Rose.
He lives here. He's a PGA Tour member. His fiance is from here. You know, like
strong ties to the Ryder Cup as well. Continue.
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's sort of like going to be. It's hard for him to sort of not feel a little bit like, well, you know, this is the country that I live in, too. Yeah. Like, you know, he can step outside of it and say, it's not my country, but it is in a lot of ways. Like, his wife is American, and his kids might be American citizens. They'll probably have dual citizenship for sure.
Yeah. Get them locked in.
I know, right? Sorry, you played in a junior Walker Cup. Yeah. Here, you're ours now.
Part of me thinks, like, the problem with what happened out there, and I don't know, a lot of people have been rolling their eyes at some of the things that, you know, it can't be that bad, or if everyone's overreacting to it. It was disturbing at times. The stuff that was said to Willett's family, that I assume was Willett's family, but that was inside the ropes at one point, I have no place to turn around and say something, but I was close to. Like, it was really bad. Part of it is part of our promotion of the Ryder Cup's not like any other event. Mm-hmm. Like, we say this, and it's like, there is this element of cheering, but it does just bring in, like, the football fan that is used to heckling somebody and has no problem heckling somebody that may not have ever been to a golf tournament before. They have no problem yelling at somebody that is not, you know, maybe won't respond to it or whatnot. So it is part of what we kind of start and promote, but at the same time, I don't know how you put a cap on it. Unless, I think the message they sent out Saturday, again, most people that are going to be yelling something, aren't going to be reading a message from the PGA of America before it. I feel like it helped. Something helped for Sunday. Maybe it was just the nature of the play or whatnot.
It's
just
Sunday, too.
Yeah, it's true.
Saturdays.
Well, Saturdays are for the boys. Sunday, well, it wasn't the church going folk, though. They were there at 11 a.m.
All the football fans are off watching football. And if you're a golf fan and you want to watch a Ryder Cup day, you pick a Sunday. You buy Friday, tickets for Sunday.
They're both pretty intense, too. I mean, they're full days, 7 a.m.
What was y'all's tour sauce of the week?
Oh, man.
It's hard to pick, but I'm going to go with Reed. Snapping the club back and then Jordan screaming at the ball before it reaches its apex.
The Reed coil.
The Reed coil.
There we go.
How do we not think? Again, my mind was mush the entire week. I don't think I had a single good tweet the entire week.
Oh,
like,
come on. You're good.
It's hard to, like.
It's know, really hard when you're out on the course to, like, moment, think creatively.
First world problems.
It is first world problem.
My tour sauce of the week is DJ popping the champagne in the press conference and yelling four left at the media.
DJ won't remember that tomorrow. No. I don't know how.
I think my. Can I change mine? I think mine is Rory singing back to, you know, Good Times Never See.
Okay, we're supposed to write a column about how tour sauce definition has been ruined, and you're just like, he's saying random things.
I did say, I just totally ruined
that. Yeah. Mine was. Has to do with Rory. I don't know if we've talked about him yet on this podcast, but it was, I think he was into 16, where he did the kind of mid-air club twirl.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like, he shifted
it. It had already landed.
He waited. He really let it go.
That was right, like, before Solly lost his soul.
I think that was kind of like a new corollary to the club twirl that we really haven't seen before. I think that was kind of
that was a
really, really kind of taking it to a new level.
The Reed coil was the first things I think of, but also the final putt that Reed hit on 18 to start the double fist.
The double fist.
We need to name this thing.
It was like 4 or 5 inches away.
The ball was not in the cup yet to win the match, to beat Rory, and he did it.
And effectively win the Ryder Cup.
Yeah. And it was. Yeah. It was.
Europe knew they couldn't win the Ryder Cup without the Rory match.
Yeah.
How much do we think Reed was told to Davis, I want... Was it a smart move for Davis to send Patrick out? I mean, there was... Like, I think it was, because I thought, actually, that Reed could beat Rory. Like, I was just... Something in my heart told me, yes. But if Rory had just, like, shellacked Patrick, you've taken one of your best players out of...
You're saying because you as the U.S. team, you know Rory's going first.
Yeah. You knew he was going to go first. You knew that was going to be this... And so, like... You know, maybe put one of your hot players out first, like Snedeker, and
I think I'm okay with the
debate about that.
Who was?
Should they lay somebody a sacrifice at Rory's feet?
Yeah. Who would the sacrifice have been?
Well, you could say you could have taken someone like Snades and who's played really well. And say, yeah, or you could have put Dustin out and say, you're not playing all that well, but you have the firepower to compete in this match. You know,
Brooks.
We haven't talked about Brooks.
We've not mentioned Brooks an hour in this podcast. Brooks was here.
I'm okay with it because I think it sends the right message in terms of like what you want from your team. Like, say, hey, our best versus our best. Let's do it.
You guys are assuming that there was a captain that had a say in this and that Reed did not go in and pencil his name in that top spot. Like, seriously, they're talking about a guy that at the start of the week said, I'm playing all five matches. Reed comes in there and says...
And I'm playing with speed.
Yeah, and I'm playing with speed. If he comes in and says, I'm going first, there's no stopping that.
He,
I'm sorry.
I mean, think about this. He was so pumped up, he had a drive way left. He had a not great approach, not a great chip to, like, 14 feet. It's an uphill, like, left to right breaker. He holed that and screamed on the first hole. That was when I thought, like... Oh, it's on. Like,
oh, my God.
This is going to be potentially one of the great matches of all time. If he's making putts like that to stay in the hole, like, that was... And it was. Like, that front nine is as good as any front nine I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how we were all writing in the press room afterward, and they start the replay... Like, it had been so long after the round, the replay had started on the screen, and we're, like, coming up to each other's rows, like, hey, here it comes. Here comes the shush. Here comes the finger wag.
And I'm running around saying...
Yeah. Porter's running around saying, I can't hear you! All right. Hour and 5 minutes in. I'm going to run out of space on my phone here soon. We got to wrap this up. Anybody have anything that we didn't... We didn't talk about Brooks at all somehow.
Brooks
3-1.
Awesome.
Debut Ryder Cup. Anything else we missed? Rafael Cabrera-Bello, undefeated on the European side as well.
Yeah. RCB.
And some of those no-name European guys, no-name from...
So that's the thing. Is will Rafa be on the next Ryder Cup team?
No. You know?
It just disappears.
Like, he just won't.
He's the Spanish Jamie Donalds.
Peter Hansen, he just goes to that wasteland.
You know who'll make a fun Ryder Cup captain someday is Sergio.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Sergio would make a fucking...
When
totally
he's, like, he's going to play on these teams until he's like 56, though, I'm pretty sure.
He's not even 40, right? He's 39? Or is he 40?
He's
39. He's younger Tiger.
Was this Phil's last American Ryder Cup?
No.
I think he still might play one more.
He can play over 50. Right.
50?
I don't think he'll be a pick, but...
He might play
Bethpage. He's never been a pick.
At 54?
He might be at Bethpage.
You're out of your mind.
I'm just saying it.
Playing Cap. No, I think
what has... Awesome. I mean, I know there's a difference between age 46 and 54. What part of Phil's game has aged?
Well...
The putting's supposed to go. He was top 10 on tour this year in putting.
He was talking about it afterwards. He was saying, he's still classic Phil. He was like, there's two areas of my game that obviously, like, I needed to get in line. Putting, first of all, which was a problem, and I feel like I've fixed that. And next year, I just feel like I'm gonna get my driving in order. And if I get my driving going, it's like...
This is like just
still looking for the fix.
On repeat every year.
He's and what's funny is self-aware is, like, he was talking after that match with Fowler about how he's like, yeah, if you look historically at the top 20 driver, the top 20 players of all time, I'm by far the worst driver. And that showed up today. It's like, you know, he's self-aware enough of that to, like, say, you know.
I think my favorite thing about Phil is how much he loves golf.
Yeah.
Like, I think Tiger loves competing and, like, the kill house mentality thing. Hashtag
kill house.
But
the kill
house. I think Phil just, like, freaking loves golf. Yeah. You know? Like, I think he just loves, like...
I think he loves being Phil.
Playing matches and just playing... Like, he'd go play Solly if there was enough money on the line tomorrow. You know? Like, I don't think he cares.
Phil, if you're listening.
All right, let's wrap it there. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this ramble session. I probably still need to do more Ryder Cup recap because I don't think we touched on everything happened over the last several days.
We didn't even talk about Fowler.
Brooks was amazing. He should be on every international team going forward.
Like, see, I feel like somebody should have made that point sometime in the past. But
Spieth, LP, CP.
Oh, wow. Whoa. You waited till the last minute. Wait until the last minute. Ending it on that one. Thank you guys for tuning in.
That's for Tron.
That's for Tron.
That was Tron week.
That take was despicable, Borath. I can't believe you would call out Jordan Spieth like that and say he lacks pop.
What about the crowd? What did you think of the crowd, Mr. Player?
The crowd was horrendously spirited and absolutely tragically into it. So hopefully next time they will have a Ryder Cup in the United States. I personally never played in a Ryder Cup, but if I did, I would want fatty Patrick Reed to lose a few pounds and play with me. He would be a great partner if he took on my gluten-free diet.
Cutting it out. Thank you. Good night.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!